So we'll continue on with the theme of medically important arachnids. One question that makes a lot of sense to address at the beginning of any phylogenetic study is, I mean, there are so many mountains to climb in systematics. Why this one? There's real good, I mean, the reasons for this are kind of obvious with black widows. Obviously, the medical importance is a good one. But beyond that, these spiders are also famous for their rather salacious sexual habits. They're a good system for the study of sexual size dimorphism. So with all these wonderful things to recommend them, you entomologists might ask, why haven't the arachnologists already tackled this problem? Well, there is a long and sad history to Latrodectus systematics. There was a global revision done in the 1950s where 22 species were synonymized down to 6. Almost instantaneously, people working with local faunas started refuting these results. Some of that work was very good, but most of it was delimited by political boundaries. The Latrodectus of Argentina, or the Latrodectus of this place or that place, and so now it seems to me that the time is ripe to try the global approach again, combining the new tools that are available, including molecules with detailed morphological work. So this is some of the sorts of data that I'm collecting for the morphological portion. This is the male genitalia. So in addition to working with museum specimens, I'm trying to get live images of many of the species, look at some evidence of behavioral characters like the egg sacs, which are actually really handy, full of characters where you wouldn't necessarily think they would be. A lot of comparative morphology. This is the male genitalia of a bunch of species, including a couple of new ones. And then combining this morphological data with molecular data and letting them kind of inform each other, my sampling strategy is to collect specimens from as close to type localities of all species, whether currently in synonymy or not. I'm pretty close to that. Some of the ones that are giving me trouble are type localities in Burma, Yemen, and Iran. I'll show you a detail of this. This is just to show the overall perspective on the size of the analysis as it stands so far. We have about 150 Latrodectus individuals sequenced for up to 4 genes. That's 3,000 bases in the alignment. 1,000 of them are informative across the matrix. Here's the detail. So basically, one of the things I want to look at is congruence among data sets. So I have 4 genes. I want to look at each gene individually. I want to look at the nuclear genes, at the mitochondrial genes, the protein coding genes, the ribosomal genes, all of them together, morphology, to see if everything is telling us the same same story. A little bit on the biogeography of this group, with the exception of the synanthropic and very widespread species geometricus, where we don't really know what the origin is. The story seems to be an old world origin with independent colonizations of North America, South America, and Australia. So this is a little bit about how we use the DNA in conjunction with distribution data to get a handle on what the species limits are. So type localities are represented within these clusters, plus other things to cover the rest of the distribution data. So I mean, the last good work on the species in North America stopped at the Rio Grande, as though we didn't want to look at Spanish-speaking black widows. We also have this population down in the Galapagos Islands, which is described as an endemic. Of course, everything in the Galapagos must be endemic. But in fact, it's the same thing that occurs all the way up to British Columbia. So that's going to be sunk. And then the idea ultimately, as a product, in addition to the regular monography type stuff, is to have all of these data points for all the specimens that I can get my hands on, which is a lot, as a Google Earth layer, and be able to click on each data point and get the collecting information, and there'll be a link, and that'll take you to the Tree of Life web project or Encyclopedia of Life or whatever it turns out to be, and there you'll have a detailed description and natural history information, and this will be ideal for high school science reports. So I'd like to, it's now I think time to talk a little bit about a sensitive topic, black widow sex. So the story is, this is how it goes. So it was discovered in the early part of the 20th century that that black widows being studied in North America ate their mates. And this happens especially when you put the male and the female in a closed container and give the male no place to go. Yes, he eventually gets eaten. This was refuted later. But the story was just too good to die, so it's remained part of the public imagination. But just to be contrarian, the Australians, which I think is part of their nature, decided to have a species that was even more bizarre. And this is Latrodectus hasseltii, the redback spider, sensibly mating with his body as far away from her mouth as possible. Then he does something very strange. He starts to do this somersault and winds up with his mouth, with his abdomen in her mouth, at which point she starts casually chewing on him. And this has become a wonderful system for the study of male sacrifice behavior, or as I like to call it, extreme monogamy. And what you, so in order to understand what's really going on here, you have to know something about the anatomy. So this is the black widow male genitalia again, and it has this this interesting little feature here near the tip of the embolus, which is the final intermittent organ, and this is a weak point that breaks off. And here it is shown with three different tips from at least two matings stuck inside the female genitalia, and this is this seems to work as a copulatory plug. And then one other thing about black widows that I should mention is you tend to get lots of males congregating around single female webs. In fact, if you do a survey, you get about twice as many males as females, so they effectively have a male-biased sex ratio. And that will become apparent why that's important in a minute. It turns out that black widows, redbacks anyway, are not the only spiders that have this similar pattern. This might be a familiar spider even to this audience. Argiope, common garden spider, also has extreme size dimorphism, also has male genitalia that break off, apparently forming a copulatory plug, also has multiple males congregating around the female web, quite distantly related from the black widow. And as it turns out, there are at least six groups of spiders that have male sacrifice behavior, and seem to have kind of the same suite of characters. So there appears to be a trend of characteristics associating that evolve multiple times. So I wanted to test this on the phylogeny, coding basically a large group of araneoid spiders for these four characters: sacrifice behavior, genital mutilation, extreme size dimorphism, and male accumulation, this multiple males around the female phenomenon. These characters were all mapped onto a phylogeny. I used the Madison's concentrated changes test, which basically looks at two character states to see whether they occur more often together than you would expect by chance. And the conclusions of that study tell a story, and I think it goes like this. First, what you get is the evolution of female gigantism. So you get large females. But the males don't follow suit in size. This means that they reach maturity faster, and ultimately, what happens is you get a male bias sex ratio. Now, there's some theoretical modeling work that shows that monogamy male monogamy can be adaptive when the sex ratio is male biased. So you have this, so with all these males, you have really intense male-male competition, and so they're going to come up with any method that they can to prevent sperm competition. And one of the most handy ways is to just break off bits of yourself. And with all this, so you have, so now these males have broken genitalia. They already have way too many males to compete with. So at that point, it seems like the downside of sacrificing yourself aren't as bad as they might seem otherwise. And in fact, there's been some experimental work that shows that males that are cannibalized gain some advantages in terms of paternity and receptivity to subsequent males. So I've been telling you all about spiders. Could this pattern apply beyond spiders? This is for you entomologists, which is everybody, I guess, but me. well, I think it does. You have very similar things going on in honeybees. Again, it's an extreme monogamy situation. Many males in a swarm competing for a single female, and the male invests all of his reproductive effort into a single mating. Similarly with ceratopogonine midges, where you see this female romantically sucking the insides of this male out through his head capsule. Not so the praying mantis. This is simply a case of a male mating with a dangerous mate, and that's actually a much more common in spiders, including black widows. And with that, I really do want to say just briefly that that I've had a lot of help from people all over the world sending me specimens and extractions, and I couldn't have done this without all of these people and funding sources. So thanks very much.